Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode, Friday's episode, TGIF. Oh my God, I can't believe it's Friday. We had so many different amazing shows, amazing guests this week. I, of course, am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I'm bringing you another exciting show. But before I go ahead and introduce today's guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Spread this message, share it with a friend, because if your friends don't learn the information that we share on today's show, hey, it's not their fault. Friends share information. Friends share news. And this is a wonderful way for your friends, your network, to go ahead and start the day. So while you're going ahead and introducing the Roundtable Talk Show to your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And our first guest is Mr. Brendan Kumarasinghe. Brendan is the founder of Master Talk, a YouTube channel he started to help the world master the art of public speaking and communication. He coaches his purpose-driven entrepreneurs on how to master their message and share their ideas with the world. Good morning, Brendan. How are you?
Very good, Sharifa. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm excited, but yet, you know, Fridays, I never know what's going to happen on the show. Tell us about yourself, Brendan.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I make YouTube videos on public speaking, and how I got started, Sharifa, was when I was in university. I used to do these things called case competitions. Think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So while other guys my age were playing footy, rugby, or basketball, I was too scared to do any of those things. So what I did instead is I applied that same competitive spirit to presentations, presented hundreds of times in university, coached a bunch of people, got a job in corporate America, and I kind of just asked myself, what do I do with my life now? That's when I had the idea for the YouTube channel, because I've realized a lot of people are really bad at communication, and there wasn't that many resources out there that people could learn from. So I started making YouTube videos in my basement. One thing led to another, and the rest is history.
Now, many times parents will say to their children, go out and get a real job, go focus on this career, do this thing, go into corporate America, YouTube, being an influencer, any of those things does not qualify as a real job. But one of the things that we often talk about is, and I talk about, last year in 2020, the most viewed, the most shared, the video with the most impressions was literally an eight-year-old. And it's like, okay, but this eight-year-old is making millions of dollars. His college education is paid for. So as a parent, you know, what more can you ask for?
Absolutely.
What do you say to people who say, you know, YouTube is not, you know, a real job?
Yeah, I think what I would say is, it makes sense for most of us. It's not a real job. For me, it's the coaching revenue that makes up for the channel. But I think what I would say in general is when you focus on your zone of genius, as Gay Hendricks talks about, how do you focus on the abilities that you can monetize and make a difference in the world with, then yeah, it could work out in your favor. Like, I never wanted to be a YouTuber. I for one, thought it was a waste of time. I wanted to be an executive at a company. But then over time, I realized that the impact I could make through YouTube is a lot bigger than I initially thought it was. So I deviated my focus on that.
Mm-hmm. And your focus is on public speaking and assisting people with public speaking.
You got it, exactly. Like, a lot of the universities don't really have curriculum in place that are that good. So hopefully everyone who can't afford a speech coach can learn for free.
I like that. Free is my favorite number. Now, it would seem though, and these are assumptions that I'm making, and that's why I talk to people and sit down with the experts who know, is that how do you make a complete channel out of public speaking as opposed to a video that says, this is what you need to know, this is what you need to learn if you want to be a public speaker?
No, that's a great question. There's a lot of nuance that I learned as I was making the videos. And that's what I challenge people to think about, because your audience will give you topic ideas that you didn't think of. It's not really possible to make only a single video on it. And I'll give you an example. How do you give a TED talk? How do you become a professional speaker? How do you present to an audience you've never met before? How do you master sciences? So there's actually a lot of ideas. You just got to be willing to talk to the audience, listen to them, and make videos around those topics. So yeah, no, I've actually, there's a lot of content left to go, but it's a great question. Love it.
Is there a particular video that's your favorite or a particular topic?
Yeah, probably the one I did on 3 daily public speaking exercises. There's not many videos on what you can actually do daily, even if you can't go to Toastmasters or you don't have the commitment or the time to work on public speaking. So that's probably the one that has made the most impact so far on the channel.
Okay, well, share with us. What are the three daily things that you can do?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is called the random word exercise. So the random word exercise is very simple. You pick a random word, a beach, teddy bear, a curtain, and you make random presentations out of thin air. So what this does is it builds your resilience so that when you're presenting areas of expertise, like on a podcast or a live round table where you're always answering the same questions, then you get a lot more comfortable with it over time. That's one. The second one is called the endless gaze. So the endless gaze is how do you get more comfortable with pausing? And the secret that a lot of the best speakers don't tell you is that we can pause forever and never make it seem awkward at all. So to get more comfortable with pausing, what you want to do is you want to stare into people's eyes for 5 minutes. So what I get people to do is go to somebody in your house and just stare at them for 5 minutes. Most people can't even last 5 minutes, Sharifa. It's kind of crazy. But if you can do that, you're going to be a lot more comfortable pausing for 3 seconds, 5 seconds in an actual presentation. So that would be number two. Number three is understand puzzle. So puzzle just means when you're preparing a presentation, when we work on a jigsaw puzzle, you know, those little pieces, those toys we used to do as kids, the technique is to always start with the edges, right? If you do the edges first and then you work your way into the middle, that's the easiest way because the corner pieces are easier to find. But we don't do that in public speaking. We always start with the middle first. We shove a bunch of content. The presentation makes no sense. And our last slide sounds like this. Thanks. So the trick is simple. Apply puzzle. When you're working on a presentation, start with the introduction, master that, do it 50 times. Same thing with the conclusion. What's a great movie with a terrible ending? Terrible movie. Do it 50 times, then dive for the middle.
I like those techniques. I would never have thought of those, especially the idea of the pause. So, I've heard the pregnant pause or the dramatic pause. Is there a reason why you feel the pause is important?
Absolutely. The pause is important, Sharifa, because it allows you to emphasize specific parts of your message. So, for example, when you say your key idea, the one sentence that you're there for, the one sentence that you want to share with the world, well, in that one sentence, you probably want to pause so that people know, oh, that's what Brendan is trying to get at. That's what Sharifa is trying to say. That's what Moeed is trying to say, or Marcel. So, when you do it that way, that's how you become more successful. So I encourage people to practice it more often.
I'll have to go ahead and practice my pause. I love it. I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, Mr. Moeed. I mean, Moeed is a sales consultant, trainer, and coach, and has worked with over 400 companies in 10 industries. For over 20 years, he has been obsessed with how and why people make their decisions. His journey started with graduating in neuroscience, where he learned about the evolution of our brain structure and the impact this has on the psychology of decision making. Good morning, Moeed. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm very well. Very well. How are you?
I'm excited to learn more. I already learned from Brendan. I'm going to learn from you, I'm sure.
Now we're learning from each other, which is great, right?
Yes. Tell us about yourself.
For sure. I'll tell you about it. The idea of the business. Every single person, and I mean every single person, persuasion is core to your success. There's a saying that, to become wealthy or to have impact, it's not really the knowledge you have, it's the people you need to know. And the bigger the impact, the more people you need to have in order to actually put that impact together. So persuasion, I call this the 360 of persuasion, right? From the moment you wake up in the morning, you are persuading yourself whether you hit that snooze button or if you wake up excited, energized, ready for the day. And persuasion is every part of our lives. And as an entrepreneur, and I work with a lot of entrepreneurs as well as sales professionals and sales leaders. But if we take an entrepreneur for an example, you cannot become successful until you learn to be able to persuade not only yourself, but others around you. You can have the best product in the world, you can have the cheapest prices, etc. But until people know about you, and until you're able to articulate that in a way that motivates and moves them to take action, it won't work. So you've got to persuade and sell to your potential clients. You've got to persuade and sell to your existing clients or customers to stay with you instead of going to someone else. You've got to persuade your investors to invest in money in you and believe in you and support you. You've got to invest your employees to show up every day as the best version of themselves and give all their energy, creativity, will, and drive towards the business. You've even got to persuade people who are not a part of your business, right, to talk about you. You know, the public, your partners, right? People who may not work for you, you know, you've got to persuade them that your business is an amazing business to work with and you want to attract the best. So you're persuading everyone around you. The problem is, persuasion is not taught in school. It's not taught in university. It's barely even taught when you're a sales professional. I'm sorry to say that, but that's the reality of it for all the research that I've conducted. But yet it's a fundamental core element of humanity, right? Expression and success. So my programs in the company called Proverbial Door is really to help you do that. It's to get your foot in the proverbial door, whether it's in the businesses you're talking to or the hearts and minds of the people that you are trying to talk to. So I teach both the science and the art of persuasion. That's where the neuroscience comes in. You know, how do we motivate ourselves, right? What's the seller's mindset? What's the psychology of the buyer, right? How and why do they make the decisions they do? And how much of that is part of neuroscience and cognitive psychology? And those are the kind of programs. So there's a lot of YouTube videos, but most of my work is around coaching, group coaching one-on-one, as well as training courses that I give to both entrepreneurs and businesses in terms of their sales teams and things like that. That's really the background of the business. And I've been in this game for almost 20 years now, selling to business to business, so B2B. That's me in a nutshell.
I like it. A lot of information, which brings me to quite a few questions. Number one, you mentioned that it isn't taught. We don't have this information. So what does your typical client come to you looking for? Because I would assume, and again, this is an assumption, they don't just go, Moeed, I don't know how to persuade.
Yeah, and the clients fall under two main categories. You have the entrepreneurs who are starting to really grow their business. Mm-hmm. And they need to hire a chief sales officer, chief commercial officer, chief revenue officer, whatever you want to call it. But they don't come from a sales background. So the mistake they make is they look for someone with experience and a track record. They hire that person and then they rely on him or her to basically just do the work. But you can't delegate what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know how sales works, you cannot hold that person accountable as a CEO. You don't know if they're doing the right things or not. You can't look at the metrics and say, hang on, there's a bit of danger here, or actually great, we're going on the right track record. So most of them hire salespeople, hire a manager of sales, but they don't create an infrastructure to make sure that sales is a success. So do you have the right incentives, compensation programs, hiring and onboarding strategy, all those things that are really important to make sure sales is successful. It's not just about hiring the best salespeople and then giving them great commission and then just lead them to it. That is a recipe for disaster. In fact, the average company loses £500,000. So in dollars, that's what, $650,000, $700,000 in 1 year of just doing that incorrectly. So that's the first one. The second one is, you're right, people don't come up to me and say, hey, I don't know how to persuade, I don't know how to sell, can you train me? So a lot of my work is outbound. A lot of my work is to do what I practice, which is to call on these companies, to email them, contact them over social media, and really teach them and inform them about things that they probably didn't know. You know, what is sales about right now? I see that they are approaching it in this way. You know, here is the impact of how you're approaching. This is what you could be losing out on, but this is what you could be gaining as well. So I don't wait for people to approach me. I practice what I preach, and I have to proactively contact them with some incredible insights that will really get them curious.
Thank you, Moeed. I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Marcel Barnavanowicz. His name is Marcel. He's a corporate automotive management assistant, real estate investor, and managing co-owner of We Buy Houses in Northern Virginia, LLC, one of Northern Virginia's highest Google ranking home buying companies and soon to be father. Good morning, Marcel. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm well. How about yourself?
I am excited. I love to learn about new things and new items. And buying homes is one of the things that I'm actually interested in right now. I want to buy my first house. It's in California, but, you know, I can still learn from you.
Multiple opportunities. If you ever need some connections over there, let me know and I can hook you up.
Definitely. I always love to be hooked up. Tell us about you. Tell us about yourself, Marcel.
So yeah, we created We Buy Houses in Northern Virginia about a year ago now during the COVID times. So my wife and I, we've always been interested in real estate investing. We bought our own house a couple years ago. So we wanted to enter that field. And, you know, it's there's quite some noise out there. You try to educate yourself. There's so much noise out there. What can you do? Can you go a traditional way, non-traditional way? So a regular investor goes a traditional way, right? They find a property on the MLS. On the active market, they go to the bank. They usually have to get a 20% down payment at least for it to be an investment property. They buy it, they rent it out, and they continue going into that same kind of transition, basically, right? Now, what does that require? It requires a lot of money, right? Unless you're living somewhere, I don't know, for an example, yeah, in the country where houses are not too expensive, let's put it this way. But if you're in an area like California, like yourself, or us in Northern Virginia or the DC, greater DC area, it's very common to have houses that start around the $500,000 mark, right? So if you wanna be an investor, I don't think it's easy for the regular person or out there that's out there to have 100K at hand, right? Every single time you wanna buy an investment property, take some time, right? And something we all don't have is what is time. So what we have done is we take a different approach. We take a direct to seller approach. And we market to people that are motivated to sell their house off market, right? Now, there is also a lot of noise about that out there. You have a bunch of real estate investors out there that call themselves wholesalers. So they wholesale a house. They basically get a house under contract at a discount and then assign it to another investor, homestead buyer, or so forth, and make a pretty penny off that. However, that means you basically buy a house at, it depends on the area, 70 cents on the dollar or so. So you try to buy places at a discount, right? Which is not always in the interest of the seller. So we try to see this a little bit different. Obviously, we can still do that. If that's in the interest of the seller, we do a bit different. But we reach out to people and really ask them, why do you want to sell your house? What's the story, right? They give us the story. They give us a timeline. They give us the condition of the house. And they give us their price. And usually what happens, investors, they give them a very lowball price and they try to negotiate. We're really not doing that much. We really try to find a solution for that person to sell their house. And a lot of times they already encountered somewhat of a difficulty, right? Because everyone knows I can just call a real estate agent and sell my house. Now, sometimes that doesn't work for certain reasons, right? So we listen to them. Sometimes they have a distressed property, right? Physically. Sometimes they have a financial situation going on. Sometimes they have 14 days to sell. You never know. And what we do really is we try to provide a solution. So what I always tell people when we get in touch with them, there's really three ways to sell a house. One is go through a real estate agent, post it on the market, which is where you usually get the biggest bang for your buck, let's put it this way, where you get the best price of it, retail. The second is get a cash offer from a real estate investor, which is usually at a discount, 70 cents to the dollar, depending where you're at in the country. And the third one is really what we focus on a lot is a creative financing opportunity. So we are one of those investors that doesn't mind to buy a property at a retail price or even above it. It really doesn't matter. What matters to us is that in the end, if we hold on to the property, that we cash flow. So I don't mind buying a house for 500 grand, although it's only worth 450, if I can cash flow on a monthly base, I don't know, $400-$500, all good. That's what we're in business for. And the way it works, there's really many opportunities, many exit strategies as well. But usually you have people in place that have a mortgage and they have some equity. So what you can do is you can take over the mortgage. Mortgage stays in their name. And then we pay them for the equity, or we create somewhat of a financing situation for the equity. A lot of times we work with tired landlords, that are basically moved on out of state, have a property in a different state for 10 years. And they say, man, it's so hard to manage that. I just don't want to deal with it anymore. So we come up with a solution where we actually upgrade them from being a landlord to become a lender. So all of a sudden they can sell their house to us and they create a creative financing structure. Basically they become Chase Bank. Now, I don't know how well you're versed with the financial market, but what do banks make a lot of money with? It's mortgages, right? That's where a lot of money goes. I don't know if you ever looked at an amortization schedule. If you buy a house for $500,000 on a 30-year note for, say, 4%, you pay almost $1 million over 30 years. Right? This is a pretty penny for the bank. So what we try to do is we tell people, how about you still make that monthly income without all the stress that you have on the side being a landlord? So this is like an example we have. So really what we try to do overall, I don't want to talk too long here, but what we do is we try to find solution for sellers that want to sell their house without really trying to, as Muid says, really persuade them to sell to us. We write to provide solutions, whether that's working with us or not, it doesn't matter. If we can be a solution, that's great. If not, we're happy to help people.
I like it. Very interesting. Moeed, I see you're nodding and agreeing with Marcel. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there were a lot of things. I mean, I'm not a real estate expert, but I certainly read a lot. And my father has a knack for it, and he's really good at it in the London area. But what Marcel was describing were a lot of the common challenges that are out there. For both the sellers and the buyers, right? And certainly that different approach that he has to financing it, it sounded interesting. I mean, one question I have for Marcel is, he says he doesn't mind paying the market price as long as he gets recurring income. My sense when you described that was it was something different to the norm, but that sounds like a typical buy to let property model. Is there any difference in relation to what you're doing, or is it pretty much the same, but you actually help the buyers out even more by taking on some of the unorthodox financing structures?
Yeah, we're taking on debt, right? In the end, it's also cash on cash return. It really depends. So here in the US, I don't know if you read Rich Dad Poor Dad, for example. It's a good example. Debt, and I'm a German, right? I'm from Germany. So debt in Germany usually is like a very big no-go. You can buy something if you have the cash at hand, right? That's what you do. Or that's what's the general idea. Now here you can take on debt, it's fine, as long as it generates an income for you, right? Debt is not necessarily bad. It depends if it generates cash flow for you. So technically debt can become an asset in a way. So it really depends on how much money as in cash do you have to throw into a transaction to look as how much do I get back on a yearly basis or even on a monthly basis. It depends how you look at it, right? So essentially, yes, we're trying to help people out. We're trying to give them solutions where they haven't really looked at. And what's interesting when it comes down to persuasion is when real estate investors reach out to people, you have no idea. In the beginning, it's always, oh man, I got 10 phone calls already. You want to steal my house? And we are really a different perspective, because the first thing we really tell people is, you know what? I might not buy your house. I'm not really, I don't have to buy your house. I just want to listen to your story and give you some solutions, what you can do. If you want to end up selling it to me, that's great. And I can give you some solutions for that. But that's really not why I call you. I want to provide you with a solution. So yeah, in the end, it's about how can you handle money, right? How can you shift money around? And the good thing is, so a lot of issues people run into is financing through banks, right? So you have credit score, you have your debt to income ratio, which in the end you max it out at some point, right? Actually pretty quick you max it out. But when you work with individuals, you have no credit score that there's being pulled. You have no debt to income ratio, really, because essentially you really only look at cash flow as the only thing you look at.
Interesting. Brendan, now we're talking about Marcel and his business. Moeed has his way of persuading. Do you work with entrepreneurs who have a business, are already in place, and then go, you know what, I want to find other ways to create more opportunities for me? And one of those ways may be public speaking.
Yeah, absolutely, Sharifa. I think the way I think about this is 99% of people in the world can't afford a speech coach, but communication is so important, whether it's to persuade in Moeed's case, or whether it's to sell or buy houses in Marcel's case, or even it's just the way that you interact with your family, right? That's why I'm really passionate about how do we democratize this information so that everyone can learn from it, so that everyone can engage and be a part of the conversation. And yeah, you know, outside of that, you know, I have a coaching practice. I train a lot of executives on the topic. But I think the big thing for me is, how do you make this more accessible to people so that people can share ideas that matter to them and to the world? So yeah, it's been fun.
So for Marcel, go ahead, Moeed.
No, please go ahead, Sharifa. Apologies.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask because, you know, what kind of content have you been publishing around public speaking, or probably called now group speaking, but through video calls like what we're on right now? How has that changed in terms of the content for you, and what are some of the key things that you're finding are that people lack when it comes to being able to speak well through video communication?
Yeah, absolutely, Mo. It's a great question. I think the way I've seen it is the content has remained relatively the same, because I find a lot of the public speaking lessons will stay evergreen, right? In 100 years, it'll still be the same principles, but you're right, those principles change in the online world. And I can give you all the best example. When you're given a presentation in person, you see everyone, you can get lunch with them, you can talk to them, you can see how they react. So if you have a joke and you're like, hey, is this joke funny? Well, you'll know really quickly by looking at them, because if no one's laughing, you know you're not funny. But you don't have that luxury in the online world, because if you're in a Zoom call and everyone's videos are turned off, you have to say the joke and assume it's funny. Just very different, right? So the key is definitely the content has changed a bit, where I've created videos like, how do you give online presentations? How do you present in an online world? But I think a lot of the principles stay the same. Like, how do you maintain the same energy levels? Even if we're not in the same room right now, right? You're in London, you know, Marcel's in Virginia, and I actually don't know, because Sharifa's in California. So we're all in different parts of the world, but I have to show up as if we're all next to each other, as if I've known you all for 5 years. And that's kind of the mindset piece to public speaking.
Yes. Marcel, do you do any public speaking through your company?
I wouldn't say public speaking very much right now. We do a lot of one-on-one speaking with customers, primarily actually on the phone. So Brendan, what you say is very interesting there, because I'm a loose goose, how I kind of see myself. I'm not one of those guys that gets on the phone and tries to read from a script, you know, or is like very, straight forward there. I try to be myself, but it's really hard when you don't see the person to see how they react to it. You know, like, how do they feel about that? Do they like to speak to people that way? Or are they more people that let me know the spiel and let's go? You don't know, you don't see the directions, right? You can only hear. So not too much public speaking. We're definitely actually looking right now into doing more of that once COVID is coming down a little bit. We want to go to local title agencies and get also other investors in the areas and do some sort of education, you know, some sort of educated presentations in terms of creative financing. So what we do a lot of is joint ventures, right? It's all about having investors come in and say, hey, I know you have an issue there with a seller. He's wanting something that you can provide him. Let's see if we have something that we can provide him with. We squad up together and we help that person out together and bring it to the finish line. So right now, really, like I said, we're only in business for a year right now, and we started within COVID, but once COVID is calming down, we're planning on getting out there a bit more.
Yes, and I think that'll be wonderful. Moeed, Marcel talked about public speaking. Do you do public speaking?
So I used to do live public speaking. Yes. That's changed into more group sessions through video communication. So I think you can still class that as public speaking. But yes, I certainly do that.
Do you find yourself using or implementing any of the things that Brendan talked about earlier as far as pausing, looking in their eyes, any of those elements?
You know, let's start with the first one, which is looking in their eyes. With video communication, you can't actually do that even though you're trying. Because for me to look in your eyes, I have to look at the camera on the screen, not at your actual screen where your eyes are. So it's a very, very different approach. It's very alien to a lot of us, actually. But I certainly do some of the things that Brendan talks about and more, because I have an acquaintance who I had on my own podcast show, Mark Bowden. He's considered the top expert in the world when it comes to human behavior and body language. And I've also been on Toastmasters, etc. So I definitely use some of the techniques that Brendan talks about. But there are a few things that are really important that I have personally found. And Brendan, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this when it comes to public speaking. and we'll talk about it through video. Number one is lighting, right? You can probably see from the reflection in my picture that there are two powerful lights there. And there's a scientific element to that. We trust faces because we're able to read faces even subconsciously. If I can't see your face clearly, my brain will automatically go to the safe option, which is let's just not trust this person, right? So the brain's always looking for the safest option. When there's no lack of information or too little information, go to safety and just don't do it, right? Don't trust. So lights are incredibly important. The other thing is the camera angle. So Mark Bowden talks about the truth plane. So all this part of your body, this front part of your body, is the most exposed area of your body. When you show that to people, rather than just me leaning in and seeing my face, it subconsciously gets people to trust you more because you're exposing the most vulnerable parts of your body to me. And there's a deep kind of evolutionary element to that where it goes back to hunter-gatherer and tribal. The other one I use is the voice. So you've noticed I'm varying my pitch. Sometimes I might talk about things a little bit quieter when I have something to talk about. Other things, when it's really exciting, I might raise my voice. Again, there's a neurological element to it, neuroscience element to it, because our brain is designed to filter out anything that's monotonous, because it's too energy intensive to keep concentrating all the time. So if something sounds boring and monotonous, one pitch, the brain's gonna vary, gonna shift it out. But if I'm varying my pitch all the time, it kind of induces you to stay focused. But one of the things that Brendan talks about is the presentation. In video, your presentation, your deck is front and center to everything that you do. And I did a workshop, which is posted on my website, all about the science, the neuroscience behind how do you keep people engaged, focused, and interested in your presentation. And there are various very simple techniques to do that. And that's the most important, because if you're doing a sales pitch or anything that shares information, that presentation is what people are going to focus on. And most people, I would say 99% of people, have had zero training on how to create presentations that really captures and maintains people's attention. And more importantly, actually helps people remember what you have said 2 days later, because 80 to 90% of what we hear or read is forgotten 2 days later. But people will always remember 100% of how you made them feel. So if they feel that they can trust you, that's also front and center to what I do in my persuasion courses. Everything we do, someone's got to trust you. They've got to trust Marcel that he is someone that honors his word, especially when it talks about financing and you're taking my property, which for most people is the biggest investment of their lifetime. And they've got to trust Brendan, for example, that he knows his stuff, right? is he saying things that aren't going to make me look stupid in front of a whole crowd of people? Because one of the biggest fears out there is not dying. I think there was a research, I can't remember the exact number, but people were asked what they feared more, dying or public speaking. A lot of people said public speaking. So they're really exposed, and there's an evolutionary element again to that. But those things are really important. So that's kind of how I approach it. And I try to kind of shove a lot of information there because there's a lot to share, but hopefully that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense to me. What kind of sense does that make to you, Brendan?
Makes a lot of sense. You're clearly someone who's very well researched, and I'm not surprised. I mean, you are a persuasion expert, Moid. And yeah, I'm familiar with Mark's work a lot. He's great. He puts a lot of great videos as well. So yeah, awesome to get to know you. And how do you think public speaking plays into persuasion? How do you think those two concepts are interlinked in the work that you do?
In the work that I do or in general when it comes to persuading large numbers of people?
I would say in either context that you feel comfortable sharing in. So for example, like you teach the art of persuasion, but how does communication and public speaking play into how we can persuade people better? Or do you think it's not a factor?
No, it is a factor, but and I hopefully have understood your question correctly. For me, public speaking and communication is a channel for persuasion, right? Persuasion is the end result at the end of the day. But I could persuade you through multiple channels, right? I can either persuade you on a one-on-one conversation. I could persuade you via email. I could persuade you via social media posting. I could persuade you by public speaking. So for example, if there's a forum where everyone comes in with shared common interests and I have something of value to talk about that, public speaking is the best way to do that. But public speaking at the end of the day, you're not speaking to everyone just for the sake of speaking. You're there to move them in a certain way. Either that's to change their mind or perspective on things, or it's to move them to want to seek more information from you, or it's to move them to buy from you. At the end of the day, public speaking is just another channel to persuade the message that you want people to hear and to take action, right? That action could come in various forms, as I said. But I see public speaking as a huge channel for persuasion, particularly if you're trying to persuade more people in a more efficient way.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. Marcel?
Yeah, so I do have a question for Brendan in that regards. When you do take on new clients, for example, right? Something that I come across with people that start working for us or with us, how do you persuade them, and maybe we can join in there too, to overcome their fear of public speaking? Because I think the first step in public speaking, right, or to be able to become a better public speaker is to overcome that fear, right? I think that's like the first barrier of entry, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely, Marcel. That's a great question. I think the way that I think about fear is understanding where it comes from. And I don't think many people talk about this. And the answer why we're scared of public speaking has nothing to do with us. The reason is because of the education system. Think about it. Most of the presentations you've given in our life were mandatory. We don't wake up one morning and say, hey, Sharif, Moeed, Marcel, you guys want to get breakfast and present all day? I don't think anyone says that, right? I'm probably one of four people in my country who does that. But most people, it's you're in school. You have to pick the topic that I choose for you, not the other way around. Where you never get to pick what you want to present. You don't get to talk about persuasion, right? You don't get to talk about podcasting or live shows. You have to talk about turnips or the Renaissance or some other random book about Shakespeare. So that's one. Two, you're presenting to students who don't want to listen to you. It's not their fault. They have to present Egypt in 10 minutes. They're biting their nails. They don't have time to give you they don't have time to listen to you. They're worried about their own thing. And three, teachers. Teachers are great. Teachers are very well-intentioned. My sister is an English teacher, but teachers are also very stressed. When you have 60 students and 60 presentations, how are you supposed to coach them all through that? So when you're always presenting mandatory things, you start to see public speaking as a chore. It's like doing the dishes, right? Or mowing the lawn. So the trick is to start changing the way we perceive public speaking. Like Sharifa is using it in a very good angle here because she's using public speaking as a medium to facilitate conversations between three people who don't know each other. That's what public speaking is for. It's for making a difference, for creating change. So the question I always ask people, I've asked every single person I've talked to, is how would the world change if you were an exceptional communicator? If you were the one of the best speakers on the planet, how would the world be different? If you're able to detail that world for yourself, it's going to be much easier to push through the fear.
I think that's an interesting answer, but I also think that's one element of it. I think their part of the fear is just being embarrassed in front of other people and seeing other people laugh at you, saying the wrong thing, mentioning, you know, the wrong words. And it's something especially new speakers or new presenters have to deal with because they are already nervous. They're already scared, you know, of forgetting something, making a fool of themselves, or maybe they trip and fall prior to doing this presentation.
Absolutely. Right. I'd love to hear from the other speakers as well. But the way I see it is, you know, being embarrassed, being scared, judgment are all important pieces that are definitely worth considering. But if you don't know what you stand for, if you don't know your message is why you're sharing it, the fear is going to consume you regardless of whether it's embarrassment or anything. But if the message is so important that you want to share it anyways, you'll still feel embarrassed. You'll still feel nervous, but you'll be able to push through it. The way I think about it is fear is like a boxing match. One side of the ring is your fear and the other side is your message. So as long as your message gets the knockout punch and wins the fight, then the fear leaves and you win. But the fear is always going to be in the ring, and that's probably the most important piece.
Mm. Oh, you're just so chill. You got all this information, just laid back. I like your style, Brendan.
Marcelo. I can tell that Brendan has been out and about for quite some time and very often already, because one thing that we see is the more you get yourself out there and the more you experience and encounter in situation, the more comfortable you are with it, right? So it's really, really about just taking action, right? But I really like that message from Brendan. It's to see the why. Why do I do it, right? Why do I do this in the first place? Am I being forced by my teacher just to do the grade, to get the grade, you know, like, because that's what's expected? Or do I do it because I chose to? Well, and if I choose to and want to get the end result, this is what I'm going to have to do and take the action. And within the process, I think that is where you then gain the comfort and the experience.
Absolutely. Now for you, one of the things that we mentioned earlier is that you are at the top of Google. Now, was this something that your company deliberately set out to do? Or sometimes just by watching our search engine ranking our results, we notice that we come up at the top for certain keywords and then we could re-strategize to really focus on that keyword. How did it happen for you?
So Sharifa, I took a different approach. One thing that I really believe in is I don't want to figure everything out myself. Mm-hmm. There's people out in the world, you know, that are experts, just like Brendan is an expert for public speaking, we for persuasion. So I come to them and ask for their advice, right? So what did we do about Google? I mean, there's a bunch of SEO experts out there, you know, but I'm always looking for the person who's different, right? So we found a coach for that too. But what we did is really, we build a website, and there's a bunch of real estate investor websites out there that are pre-written and everything, and they're okay. It's okay. But it's not going to help you to rank on Google, right? Because everyone has the same. So what we did is we took the website and we deleted everything, the whole script, everything. And we started writing. We started writing something that resembles with what we actually do, right? And what the client or the motivated seller in this situation is interested in. Because if you please Google based on their 300,000 pages long policies and whatever, the likeliness everybody else is going to do it, and you're not going to rank very high. But if you please your audience, and your audience is, because you please them, is staying on your website, is coming to your website, that in return gets you up to Google. So Google looks at it from a perspective like, is someone visiting the website? Is someone staying at the website? What's the bounce rate? And do they scroll through it slowly and stick to certain parts? So really, we don't look much at keywords. I mean, luckily, our name, which was strategically meant to be, is what we do. So if you Google our business, which is already showing what we do, it's a bit easier to rank high. But again, is what we did is we drove traffic to our page, and the traffic stayed at our page because we're intentionally showing something different. It was interesting. If you look at, I don't know, Buy My House in Northern Virginia, whatever, you do have 12 pages. They're all the same. Just a different brand. It's all the same, you know? So it's easy for sellers to look, oh, same again, bounce, gone. So what we really try to do to draw bottom line under this is please our audience and don't please Google. And that is, again, gets you up there.
That makes perfect sense. Now, Moeed, I know with persuasion, as a business consultant, one of the things that I've seen is that the person's website doesn't persuade the customer or the potential client to take any action, to do anything. There's no call to action. There isn't any information on what you want the person to do or even what you do. Have you seen that with your clients as well, Moeed?
What, on their website?
Yes.
I mean, I have a marketing degree, but I didn't follow it professionally. So there are other people out there that are more experts than I am when it comes to this. But I can certainly talk from a neuroscience and psychology principle. There's the element of the way that the website looks and feels now, right? There's a lot of research that's done by Salesforce and a few others, and you can look at Salesforce, you can look at, I think it's Spotify's website. They seem to have a structure that works really well. It's clean, it's not crowded. When you go to the website, the message so the first thing that a person sees when they go to your website, assuming they go to your homepage, right? But if they go to any pages, what does the message say? Is it generic, like what everyone else says? Or is it something that really stands out and hits home to my emotions? There's a book that was published by a gentleman called Brendan Kane. It's called Hook Point. He's more famous for writing his first book, which is how he got 1 million followers on Instagram in 30 days. We live in a 3-second world. It isn't because we're getting dumber. It's just because there's just so much information out there that our brain has, and it does what it's supposed to do, which is to now say, okay, there's too much information. I can't understand all of that. My filtering process is going to get thicker, and I'm only going to let in things that really hit home for me. So the threshold and the bar for having more attention has gone a lot higher. So that first sentence, whatever it is, or phrase on the website has to be so, so powerful. It's got to be evocative. It's got to hit my emotions, right? My ultimate emotions or my worry about something. And it's got to arouse my curiosity. Those three things will make you take action, which will either be click or scroll down and learn more. So if someone's buying a home, for example, or they're selling their home, and they come to Marcel's website. Marcel, what would you say is probably one or two of the most common fears when someone is selling their home?
Well, first of all, are they legitimate, right? Do they try to take me for a ride, or are they actually buying my house, right?
Right.
This is a big fear that we encounter, is the credibility factor, which is what we intend this website to be. It's not to generate people, it's a credibility check.
So that's really important, right? Because it speaks to the core element of the book that I'm going to be publishing soon, which is around trust, right? Can I trust that this person actually is serious and wants to buy my house, or they're going to take me for a ride?
Or is it a real person? Are they actually real people?
Real people. Yeah. So, and this is very basic, right? I mean, this is hugely assumptive, right? So, but based on that, the website should show maybe faces. That's the first thing. The first part of the page is called the God spot, right? Before you scroll down, so from the top of the screen to the bottom of the screen, it's called the God spot, I think, right? And that part has to show something really powerful. So maybe faces in the background, but certainly a sentence that will address to that. So the thing that came to mind for me straight away was, a list of all, I don't know if you can publish names or something like that, but almost kind of saying the list, a list of all the people or the properties that we have bought in the last 12 months or something like that. Something that visually instantly says to that person, hey, this person's serious. They've bought homes, and look at all these people that they've bought homes from. They've got to be trustworthy or at least worthy of me to read further. So something that talks to the overriding fear of when someone is visiting your website. For me, it's a very crowded space. There are a lot of charlatans out there. There are a lot of, the one thing that I hear the most is this sales trainer the real deal? So what I'm trying to change on my website is, does each page show that I am the real deal? Are there any endorsements, the book, or something else that shows that I am the real deal, right? That's probably how I approach it in terms of persuasion. Don't try to persuade everything. The job of the first part of the website page is to get them to want to learn more. And as you get them to learn more, then you talk about other levels of persuasion, right? And it's all a funnel to action, right? People think I've got to wow them enough that they're going to want to call me. No, the first stage is wow them enough to read more. Once they read them more, wow them enough to allay all the fears that they might have. Once I've allayed all those fears, wow them enough that they're going to want to pick up that phone or submit their details to me, right? It's stages of persuasion. I call it stages of trust building, right? That's how I would approach a website. But like I said, I'm not an expert in marketing. There are others that are better than I am, but from a persuasion element, that's some of the things I would think about.
But that's what we were looking for from a persuasion perspective, because it all is a part of it. You know, you want to persuade them in order to make the sale. You have to do that in a certain way. Marcel, how do you do that? You said that one of the fears is, are you a real person? Are you real people? Are you a real company? How do you provide that information?
So really, when you do visit our website, something that's important to me first is, what do we do, right? So you can see that based on our name already. And the face of our company is actually my wife. I just thought she's a bit more, you know, nicer to look at than myself. So you see in the background here, you can see our logo. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't use this logo actually as a profile picture or anything. Mm-hmm. Actually, our profile pictures is always a picture of my wife with our polos or whatever. So it's always someone, you know, it's not just some logo. And then what I also do on our main page is, the further you scroll down, is every break, every content break, so to speak, when you go kind of to the next section, is always a line of a review, of a Google review, you know. And that can be a review of a personality review, right, about us. That can be a review of a transaction that we've done, anything like that. And like I said, for me, it's important. The website is not lead generation as a priority. So for me, the website is really in terms of credibility, because what do people, normal people in any business, what do? They get something in the mail, they see an ad somewhere, or someone called them, you know, and cold called them. And like you probably get 3-4 calls a day, you know, nowadays with your extended warranty or whatever it is, you know. And so what you do is, really, everyone goes online. They say, okay, there's a We Buy House in Northern Virginia. What do? They Google We Buy Houses in Northern Virginia. They look, oh, actually, okay. They have a Google for Business profile. Ah, okay. Profile picture of some lady. Understood. Ah, and here's the link to their website. First one rank. So then they go on there. And then really the things that we speak, you can find on the website as well. And now I can also see how other people already reviewed them. You can see those reviews that we put on the website. We actually have them on our Google Business profile. So what we want to avoid is, you see that sometimes on websites there's reviews and you're like, where does this review come from? Could you have written that yourself? Like, where does it connect with? So we really right now use our Google reviews, and we don't have too many yet. We're still, like I say, only a year in business, but we really try to connect those things together and create this credibility factor, because what you want to avoid is if someone sees an ad or whatever from you and they go online and they find your competitors rather than yourself. Now you just market it for your competitors. So that's the goal for us.
A lot of information, a lot of useful information that we can incorporate into our businesses. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I'd love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Brendan.
Yeah, absolutely. I always like to end with the book recommendation, some life advice. So my book recommendation is a book called Thirst by Scott Harrison. I think Scott's a genius in marketing, messaging, and branding, especially in the context of storytelling and public speaking. So I encourage everyone to check it out. He's the CEO of Charity Water. It's a nonprofit he started. Really powerful story and a great lessons from the book. So besides the book, life advice is the following. Be insane or be the same. If you want to be like everyone else, it's totally fine. But if you want to make a difference in the world, you want to do something important with your life, I found that the only way to do that is be crazy. I started a YouTube channel on public speaking and executive communication tips at the age of 22. And then I went to coach C-suite executives when I was 23. But I'm literally having this conversation on a mattress. I still live in my mother's basement. I dance alone in my basement an hour a day, karaoke in 8 different languages. And I love Justin Bieber. How does this make any sense? And that's the point. When every decision in your life makes sense to the only person that matters, which is you, you'll probably be very successful in life. So be insane or be the same.
I love it. That was fabulous. Thank you, Brendan. Moeed, what do you have for us? That was a hard act to follow.
One of the elements of having nobility of spirit is to be able to share your perspective on things. When you ask someone to describe someone who is noble, there's an instant feeling, which is that person has character, but they're able to share their point of view eloquently with passion and clearly. And if you cannot speak to the world, then you will not, you can't have your voice heard, right? And in order to do that, you've got to know how people like to hear certain things. You've got to know why people make certain decisions. So if you're an entrepreneur, you know, and you see these stories all the time where people are banging on doors, knocking on doors, making phone calls, doing all those things. What, if you're an entrepreneur, you've got to be a salesperson, because no one is going to come to your product, whether you are Facebook or anyone else. They sold it in some way, shape, or form at the beginning. And I think it takes courage to do that. But one of the things you can do in order to build courage is to build that courage muscle. So connected to what Brendan said, do something that scares you a little bit every day, or do something new every day. Not something that scares the hell out of you, but something that just scares you a little bit. Right? To give you an example, have a cold shower today. Just try it, right? And when you do those small things, other than the fact that it's really good for you, but when you do small things like that every day, you will build up that courage muscle, so that picking up the phone or talking to someone strange is no longer that scary anymore. So build up that practice. Do what Warren Buffett says, which is wake up, go to bed every day smarter than you were when you woke up. Learn something new, do something new every day that's outside of your comfort zone. Because to grow, you've got to get comfortable with discomfort.
Yeah. So
that's what I would share.
Thank you, Moeed. Marcel, what do you have for us?
So for me, I'd like to tell everyone out there that wants to be an entrepreneur and that might be in a 9-to-5 today, which I am still today and also plan to do in the future, for now, is to just take action. Go out there, fail forward, you know, fail, you know, you become more comfortable with it along the way. And really, when speaking with people, specifically what Brendan said, and we as well, it not always clicks on the first contact, right? It's, to me, it's about for people to think about this way: get to know me, get to like me, get to trust me. And it's a process, right? And it takes time. There are many things you can do along the way. But really, to me, it's about taking action and be consistent. Be consistent, What Moid also says is very interesting, because it's a mindset, right? Do something that's uncomfortable every day that gets you in the mindset of consistently doing something uncomfortable and being uncomfortable on a daily basis. It doesn't have to be the same thing. So being consistent and taking action is I think very important. And one last thing I want to share with the audience is, and I told you in the beginning as well, Sharifa, we've connected all over the country. We have a main business partner. His name is Pace Morby, who is one of the leading industry experts also for real estate and creative financing. And we love to, when it comes to credibility, if you need someone that is credible, a real person to talk to, and you have issues with your property, we're happy to connect you with anyone in the country here and solve your problem or give you a solution for your problem, whether we're involved or not.
Thank you. I just want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. You're very important to me. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you from tuning in. Whether you watch the show 4 months from now, 8 months from now, 4 years from now, it doesn't matter. We still appreciate your support. We appreciate you for going ahead and share the show. But I always ask, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to help you, to provide you with information to better your business, to better your life. So please support them. Visit their websites. Their website link is in the Facebook post. But I also invite you to go ahead and follow them on social media. Follow them on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever their social media platform is. Reach out to them, send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.